Welcome to it. If you just tuned in, this is, of course, In Season with Sake, as it is now 10:17. It's a Wednesday, so you know how we roll, how we've been rolling this month of June. This every Wednesday, we are unlocking kingdom business, everything with regards to business, the marketplace,
and
you know, and it's been amazing. The reception from people are, you know, has been positive. You know, they are wanting to know more, to learn more, to be educated. They love the empowerment. And you are back again, my sister, looking ever so beautiful and gracious. How are you?
I am excited to be back, and you look gorgeous yourself. And I know the viewers look amazing, yep. And they've got their coffee cups out, and they've got their notes mm-hmm. out, so they can really take out some, you know, lovely notes on their writing pads just about what we're going to be discussing. Get your pens out, yep. Guys. It's getting you excited to start your own business.
Yes, yeah. And I'm excited. And that, of course, exactly is what, you know, we'll be doing today, getting you excited to start your own business, you know, and, you know, developing a value, a proposition for one's business, you know, to stand out in the marketplace is, I think, pivotal. Let's start with what is a value proposition.
Lovely. Okay, so viewers, listeners, amazing, extraordinary entrepreneurs, hello Cape Town, hello South Africa, hello Africa. Are you guys ready to change the world? I really want to speak to world changers today, yeah. Sasaki, right? We want to get this movement like on track, right? And so I want us to do something slightly different today.
Okay.
Can we get all of our listeners and viewers like writing in, sending in their voice notes? We want to engage and we want to interact with you. We need to understand, where are you with your business, right? Are you thinking about starting a business? Have you started a business? Then you need to tell us, right, in terms of what are you struggling with? Like, please highlight, are you struggling in terms of selling your products and services? That would be sales. Are you struggling in terms of bringing in customers into your store or getting people to know about your products, which is marketing? Are you struggling with hiring people? Are you struggling with getting the right suppliers in terms of being able to produce what you're trying to produce? You need to tell us, just in the whole cycle of business, are you struggling with sales? Are you struggling with marketing? Are you struggling with HR? Are you struggling with recruitment? So we may address your issues, you know, in the next couple of weeks. And I'm so excited to be here, right? So when we talk about getting you excited to start your own business, a lot of us as entrepreneurs, we've rushed into starting our businesses and we're selling goods and services and expecting someone to come and buy. Mm. Who should come and buy? Yeah. How will they know what you are offering? And why should they actually care?
Yeah.
You know, one of the key things is we are fixated with giving solutions without understanding our customers and what they need, right?
Yes.
So when we talk about how to start your own business, we need to understand what we need to do in preparation to getting to your point where you can then go and register your legal entity. Mm-hmm. Before then, you need to do some groundwork. We call it research, right? Yeah. You need to ask yourself, why are you going into business? And if you do have a business, why do you exist, right?
Yeah.
And the reason why you ask yourself those questions, Sasaki, is to unpack and establish what problem is your business solving in the marketplace. The only way that the most extraordinary businesses are able to sustain is if you have identified a key challenge in the marketplace or in the place where you're operating and you're solving that problem, right? So when you think about it, if I stay at Khayelitsha, right? And at Khayelitsha, every evening were battling because I forgot when I went out of work to pick up my loaf of bread. Where will I get my loaf of bread if there's no shopping mall around Khayelitsha? This is very hypothetical. Yeah. If there's no ShopRite, if there's no Pick and Pay nearby, and I need to travel 100 kilometers, and my children need some bread, or my neighbor's children need some bread, yeah, where would I get that very key commodity? If I lived in Khayelitsha, then I would sit and think to myself, you know what? There is a need that needs to be met, yeah, right? So the idea of developing a value proposition is when an entrepreneur would then realize that I'm struggling with the bread of loaf because I leave work too late to be able to go into my shopping center next to my workplace to get a loaf of bread. Therefore, every time I get home late, then I'm out of a loaf of bread, I'm out of milk, I'm out of like the key commodities that we need as a household.
Yeah.
If I am struggling with that, and I did some research and realized that even my neighbors are struggling with that, in fact, the only time we can go grocery shopping is on Saturday, then they would be an opportunity for an entrepreneur to set up a spaza shop. You know what I mean? That's how you solve problems. You don't go and set up a spaza shop just because your neighbor has set up a spaza shop and the other neighbor has also set up a spaza shop. So think about it, right? When we go into Waterfront, right? And you go into Louis Vuitton. Mm. Louis Vuitton will sell a bag for 50,000 rands. It's a bag, right? You go to YDE, Young Designers Emporium. You can go into YDE and possibly perhaps buy a bag for 2,000 rands, but Louis Vuitton is selling a bag for 50,000 rands. So think about it, businesses and entrepreneurs and buyers of these goods and services. Why is one customer willing to go and buy a product of a bag for 50,000 rands because it's called Louis and the other one is called YDE? And in this bag, this person is willing to pay 2,000, the other one is willing to pay 50,000. Mm. In the mind of the buyer, they see value in that bag being worthy of the price, 50,000. Yeah. So when you think about it, when you get to Louis Vuitton, you're not getting there to negotiate the price. Mm-hmm. You get there, you pay exactly what it is. They're not willing to bring down their prices. Yeah. In fact, they don't even do sales. You know what I mean? Mm. So when you think about it, who are these consumers that are willing to purchase a bag at 50,000 rands, right? Mm. And what is the difference between that bag and a bag for 2,000 rands? It's a perception of the value. So when we talk about developing a value proposition, what these two institutions have done, Louis Vuitton has been able to design something that is a customer compelling value proposition that the buyer is willing to pay the price for it, mm-hmm, right? For example, they would sit and say, we are selling luxury goods and we are very unique in terms of the design and the look of the bag. You're never going to find it anywhere else. They've got a very specific print, right? And it's so specific to them. And so the way that they make this bag and the value and the design and the forward thinking approaches, they are able to place a price tag. So when you're developing a value proposition, there are two things that you need to think about, right? Mm-hmm. You need to think about, as you are unpacking, what problem are you solving? Mm-hmm. When you ask yourself that question, one of the key things that entrepreneurs need to be able to establish is a customer compelling approach in terms of designing a solution of a bag that will resonate to your customers. Vice versa, I love bags, therefore I'm designing bags. So I'm making products and services that I expect consumers to buy. And I haven't done research. Mm-hmm. I don't know who's my target customers. I don't know what price are they willing to pay for this bag. Yeah. I don't know what is the value of this that I'm offering. What is it? Is it the technical skill that has gone into putting together this bag? Is it the sourcing of the product that is used to design the bag? What exactly am I selling? So if I do an internally driven approach, right, where I'm just designing bags because I love bags and I expect people to buy, then I'm so shocked why I'm not getting sales. Yeah. Yeah. I'm so shocked that I haven't paid my rent for my store because no one has bought my bags. It's because that is an internally driven approach. It's what someone that I think is absolutely extraordinary, who talks about entrepreneurship, Simon Sinek. He explains it as a finite approach, right? Okay. Finite means there's a start and a, and an end, mm-hmm. right? So in it, you are designing and making goods and services that you want and expect people to buy, but there's no compelling proposition of why people must buy these things, right? Mm. Vice versa, infinite basically means there's no start, there's no end. You're not competing against anybody. You have decided that there's a need of a spaza shop in Khayelitsha. You've done your research to understand that there's a need for groceries to be sold after 7 p.m. because no one else can sell those goods and services.
Yeah.
Therefore, you've designed it at a stop sign that is very busy where you're able to engage everyone mm-hmm. that's jumping out of the taxi, everyone that's jumping out of the bus. Therefore, it's strategically positioned. You know your target customers. It's all the working moms and dads mm-hmm. that don't get to go grocery shopping during the day.
Yeah.
And they've got kids and we need to do mm-hmm. lunch teams for our kids. Therefore, you've designed the solution around being able to pick up those, you know, goodie items that we need in the evenings that we wouldn't get during the day.
Yeah.
So your spaza shop is busy. You might not even be busy during the course of the day, but you know,
but you know
when 4 o'clock hits right up until 9 p.m. And the reason why you've made the working hours different is because you're accommodating your customers. You're open till 9. When you think about it, every Pick and Pay and every other store closes at 6 or closes at 7 p.m. So now you're taking care of extra hours so that you can be able to make sure that you are meeting the needs of your customers. So developing a value proposition is one of the key things that we teach in business and entrepreneurship, that a lot of these institutions that you're looking at, from the big financial institutions to your retail, they've developed a compelling customer value proposition. That's why it looks like they don't go out and look for clients. It looks like clients are looking for them.
Mm.
But it's because their value proposition is so compelling that there is a need.
Sure.
You don't go out and shout and say, please, please come into my store, come into my institution. It's because we need that service. So we go looking for them. And when the need is met, this is where a sale happens, because I am willing to put down the price in exchange for what you're actually mm-hmm. selling to me. So that's basically developing a customer value proposition. And one of the key things is, as we think about the solutions of the goods and services that we want to create in the entrepreneurship space, we need to start thinking global. We need to start designing goods and services that are have a clearly articulated customer value proposition. But the reason why something becomes global, I'm going to talk about a brand that a lot of South Africans can relate to. Let's talk about Trevor Noah as a brand. What we don't always take into account is that Trevor Noah is selling a service.
Mm-hmm.
And the service is what? It's comedy. He's selling comedy. The same way that we've got people that are listening right now, their goods and services is music. Others, it's goods. It's literally someone is selling a book.
Yeah.
Someone is selling stationery. Someone is selling. All of those are goods and services. It's in the marketplace. There's a willing buyer. There's a willing seller. When we think about developing a value proposition, why has Trevor Noah's proposition been so compelling
yeah.
that the United States audience and customers said were willing to put money and buy the service that this gentleman is serving? Being a South African, like just all of us,
yeah.
you know what I mean? If you listen to Trevor Noah's comedy, which is what he's serving his customers, even when he started, there was so much depth.
Yeah,
there was so much research. There was so much understanding in this that he was offering, the service of comedy to his targeted customer, which is the audience that is listening in. When he talked about anything in relation to any challenge,
yeah.
right? And he put it in the format of comedy, the way that he understood the depth and the understanding and the intricacies of the issues. He was able to deliver it with such ease, partly because he knew and understood the problem that he's solving in the marketplace. He took what we couldn't talk about, that were real challenges, that were uncomfortable to discuss, and he put it in a platform where he could talk about it in the form of comedy, that when we received it, we knew those were truths. But the way that it was delivered, it was in the, it was in a structure and in a format where the value proposition was so compelling that I'm willing to go and purchase a ticket for $100 to go and listen to him speak, right?
Yeah.
But you look at, there's a lot of comedians that he started off with. A lot of them have remained, unfortunately, in the areas where they started. When you think about being global, one of the key things as businesses and entrepreneurs, we need to start thinking about how we take, if I am making a beautiful product and I'm a fashion designer and I've decided that African designs, that's my thing, right? This is where I see a value that I can offer to the market.
Yeah.
When you look at all of our African prints, they are overwhelming in color. They are rich. They are vibrant, right? And when you think about it from a South African context, that's who we are. Wow. Our culture is rich. Our heritage is rich. We're colorful. We're loud. We're beautiful. We are, we're just these kind of interesting characters, right? How would you take that same product and make it sell in the United States or in the United Kingdom? When you think about the audience or the target customer there, they don't have the same type of skin tone, right? They, some of them may look pale. So when you think about this fabric that's colorful, will it still be appealing on that customer? So it's taking that product and tailor making it so that it would still appeal with that vibrancy that it brings about, and that authenticity of being African, but tailor making it to suit your target customer. But also, the key thing becomes about developing a value proposition is you need to understand in terms of what would be compelling to that customer. Don't take a product just because you know that it's beautiful for Africa and assume that someone must like it, must buy it because it's African. That's not good enough. You need to be able to find, in terms of how you're going to sell your products and services, what will be compelling for that customer to buy it. It's different element. It could be they buy the product because it's authentically made by African women and they feel passionate about job creation. Yeah. Therefore, when you say proudly South African and you put a stamp on that product, their thing is we love Africa and want to embrace the communities. Therefore, because it's authentically made and woven by African women, that's the reason that they're buying it. But now when you've taken these fabrics and made them look appealing, that it doesn't overwhelm, then what you're doing now is taking it a step further where someone is not just buying it because they want to create jobs or they feel that this will impact communities in Africa, but you've now taken a step back to say that the fabric itself has got the appeal of being African, but it also resonates with just how I look because I'm different, you know, and therefore being different and the weather being different, this is sort of like tailor making and speaking to what I would actually embrace.
Yeah.
So a lot of the times, especially from a South African context, we're creating products and services and they are great for South Africa, but we need to start tailor making if we're going to be, you know, relevant to a global audience. That same product in terms of what is it that those customers are looking for? What is it that would appeal to them? Because this being authentically South African is great, but it has to have and be underpinned by a value proposition, right? And the value proposition, really, it has to be customer driven. If you were writing notes, just to understand the foundation of it, it needs to address who is the target customer. You need to know what's the time frame it takes to produce that product or service, but it also has to then have the price tag, and the price tag that you put on has to deliver a positive customer experience. And if you are selling cakes and everyone else is selling cakes and you put in a price tag of 100 rands per cake, you need to decide that your chocolate cake, if someone else next door is also selling a chocolate cake, the experience of them eating your chocolate cake, will it be superior? Will it be inferior or will it be equal to anybody else's fine chocolate cakes? But perhaps you've put in an ingredient there that is so unique in your family recipe that you know that it will be compelling to that particular customer because it's got a little bit of mint, and you know that people that love mint, that will resonate. It's still chocolate, but it's got that minty thing going on. So I really want to encourage entrepreneurs, because this is a workshop. This is slightly different from some of the shows that we've had, is that we need to understand where you are so that we can help you develop a formidable and a winning value proposition for your business so that it starts to stand out.
Yeah.
Think about if you are solving a problem. And if you're not solving a problem, you're going to have a fundamental issue growing the business. It doesn't matter whether you've been operational for 10 years. You have to, at some point, take a step back and address the foundational things. Because if you don't have customers looking for your goods and services, it means that they are struggling to identify how they can utilize them, right? So we haven't even got to marketing yet. We're just talking about before you even register the business, or if your business is already registered, developing a value proposition that will be compelling to your target customer, that they're willing to put in monetary value in exchange for what you're selling.
Sure, that was a lot to digest. And listen, this is indeed a workshop. So if you've got anything to say, any questions that you'd like to ask Kusis Nogwaza, please send him through on 061-798-1075. She said it. Let us know where you are with regards to your business, and she will hopefully answer all of the questions that you might have. You know, maybe you need guidance and with in everything in that manner. Now, I know that you touched on solving the problem quite a few times.
Yeah.
You know, can you take us through what it means for one to have a business that solves a problem in the market area?
Okay, perfect. Right. So solving a problem means being able to identify an issue. A lot of people that go into business that I have met as entrepreneurs, especially from a Western Cape audience, they have worked for certain institutions, for companies for many, many years, right? And then what would happen is over time, someone either retires or decides that they want to pursue business, right? So, for example, I've been working as a plumber. I've worked for this plumbing firm for the past 25 years. I know all the clients. I know all the challenges. And so what happens is, now that you understand that industry very well, one of the issues that you could pick up is the plumbers are not reliable. They say they'll arrive at 9. No one ever shows up at 9. They don't communicate to their customers that they're not going to show up. And so a lot of the work just falls onto the wayside, partly because someone is unable to be reliable. It could be a combination of issues. They've got too much work. They don't really take time to do administrative roles in their work to communicate to clients to say, you know what, I'm running late. I won't make it at 9 o'clock. And you decide that I'm not a big company. I don't have that many clients. So the problem that I'm going to solve is efficiency. It's the time turnaround that it takes to be able to acknowledge a call of someone that's having a plumbing issue and being able to resolve it. So what I am going to do is, I have been in the industry for the past 10 years. I speak to a youngster that I know, they helped me design a beautiful app. And what the app does is, every time a client calls me, right, I then ask them to download the app and they become users of this app. So they would then log a query through the app, right? The app would notify me to say that there's a log that's been called at Musenberg. So what it does is, I acknowledge it and I say, I'll be there at 11 o'clock. And I put as part of my processes a 2-hour turnaround time. That becomes my value proposition to my clients. I am going to deliver the service. The service is plumbing.
Yeah.
And everyone doing plumbing does plumbing. Mm-hmm. But what is going to be the unique in your value proposition is the efficiency and 2-hour turnaround time. And that's uniquely to the service that you're providing to your target customers. So now what would happen is, because you are efficient and you've put in the processes to be able to ensure that you're able to deliver a service within 2 hours, what it does is, the guys that have been pressed with having calls locked. Like, for example, their retail shops, and retail shops own infrastructure. They would have on average like so many stores in just one shopping mall or within radiuses that are close to each other. Now you would become the plumber that goes to the retail institution to say, I can provide you plumbing services. I can do it within a radius of 0 to 15 kilometers. Yeah. I've got guys on the ground that are artisans that I've trained. And what would happen is, as soon as we acknowledge that you have locked a call or a query of a plumbing issue, I have 10 minutes to acknowledge that call. I get my guys dispersed into those operations to fix that plumbing issue. And we can guarantee you a 2-hour turnaround time. So if this retail has got about maybe 1,000 stores just in Western Cape alone, you are now servicing a certain aspect of their portfolio. So when you are now sort of like, your mind is open to solving problems. You don't think about the goods and services that you are going to be offering the clients. You think first about solving the problem, and then the goods and services is what underpins what you do, right? A lot of people, like, for example, if you're in music, there's so many genres of music, right? Who are you selling your music to? Like, who's your target consumer? And what exactly do they want to hear from you? A lot of entrepreneurs, we forget that the aspect of what makes us unique is yourself, right? My story is unique to me. My challenges are unique to me. What makes me different and being able to do what I need to do is because of the challenges that I've had to overcome. So when I am doing what I'm doing, I bring myself to the forefront. And that's the unique value proposition. It's the aspect of overcoming challenges. It's the aspect of having had so many failures and trying to figure out how to pick yourself up and rebuild a business when it has failed. How do you pick yourself up when you've had, when you've lost contracts? How do you pick yourself up when clients have not paid on time? How do you pick yourself up when you've had to fire people and let them go? How do you pick yourself up when the losses have been too traumatic to make sense of? In that, there's always a seed and there's always bread in everything that you've been through. 2 Corinthians 9 verse 10 says, the Lord gives seed to the sower and bread to eat. So in my own story, and in your own individual story, and in the story of every entrepreneur, there is something that you've been through that is uniquely your experience that you could either sit and wallow in the pain and have a pity party, or you can just sit up and sit and say, that's what I will offer as a problem that I'm solving in the market. I'm going to go and tell entrepreneurs that you can overcome in business. I'm going to tell entrepreneurs that even when you've lost it all, you can find a way to pick yourself up and move on for as long as you still wake up in the morning. You're going to go and teach them and train them and develop them to be able to use the things that were hurdles that you had to overcome to sit and say, you can go and knock on the doors of corporates and get work. You can knock on the doors of government and get work. What you need to be able to do is develop a value proposition. What you need to be able to do is to be able to build strategic relationships. What you need to be able to do is bring your story as part of your authenticity of what is unique. Why come to OSA? Why not go to other institutions? Is because, yes, we provide services, but we do it underpinned by transformation through training and development of entrepreneurs, through job creation, where we don't just do the work ourselves, but we find emerging macro enterprises to partner with. Your story is unique. Everything that you've been through, entrepreneur, that's what makes you so compelling. I had the great privilege, and big ups to CCFM for the Jazzathon. So I'm attending the Jazzathon, praise be to God. And in attending all of that, I came across the show and sort of like all the different artists that were performing like at the gospel festival. And when I started to do my research, I realized that the person that had produced it has got an album out called My Testimony, right? So because of that experience, now I'm engaging a brand. And as I'm doing a little bit more research, I was listening to this album called My Testimony, which is something I never normally would have come across. And when I was listening to the music, it was ministering to me, and I realized that this artist has been through pain. He's been through trauma. He's been understand. Through challenges.
Yeah.
There are things that he's overcome. Now, when I listened to that album, I realized that he's ministering, but he's ministering from a place of ever having overcome some hurdles, some pain, some trauma. I don't know what his story is, but that for me is what is unique about a value proposition. He has delivered an album of music. That's the product. But in it, it's a testimony. And that's why it's framed, my testimony.
Yeah.
Every uniqueness in what you've been through, that's what you bring to the forefront that enables you to develop a value proposition.
Yes, sure. Wow. I want us to quickly hear what some of the listeners are saying. Manisha February is saying, we are struggling with getting clients and sales. We are battling to making sales. However, the opportunity is there for printing needed in the area. We open a print shop for... rather at our home, so there is not a lot of foot traffic.
Okay, perfect. So, Manisha, let's talk about this, right? You're struggling with sales. The issue that we need to unpack a little bit further is, in the sales that, because she's identified that they're in the printing space and they're doing printing from home. So that is absolutely beautiful, because now what they're doing is they're reducing their overheads. Their overheads won't be as high.
Yeah.
But the issue is, what is unique about their printing? Why should anyone come and print, right? It could be their prices are low and their prices are lower than the competitors, but they need to take that value proposition and communicate it to targeted consumers, right?
Okay.
So if I am printing at alternatives like Jetline or all the others that are well known, as opposed to going to her printing house, how will I even know about it? And how will I know that she's cheaper than the other competing brands? She needs to find a way to tell her story, but more importantly, to articulate what is the unique value proposition. For example, Manisha's printing house, 20% cheaper in terms of printing, and they will then explain in terms of what makes them. It's because they don't have high overheads because they're working from home, which is very innovative, and big ups to her for what she has done. But the issue of traffic is, you can't expect traffic unless you have communicated your value proposition to target customers. Right.
Sure.
Who is her targeted customer? Is it a man on the street that's trying to print their ID? Is it small, medium, micro businesses that need printing for their company profiles and their business cards? And if it's that target market, has she gone out to build those relationships? Are they aware that she is producing amazing printing at the same quality as you would get in all the other competing brands like Jetline? Has she been able to take her story to be able to tell it so that the target customer can come and buy it, right? So then that takes us to the leg of marketing. Now, marketing is a word that we use very loosely, right? You don't have to go into huge marketing, sort of like budgets. You can do the social media of setting up an Instagram page. You can do the Facebook that everybody else does. You can get some business cards where you distribute them every corner of the place that you're operating from. Go to bigger companies than you and ask them to say, I've got these flyers, I'm running a special, may I please have them here so that when people are paying, they can pick it up. At every grocery store, at every pick and pay, at every shopping center, your flyers must be available. Get some beautiful, gorgeous young people on a Saturday, wear bright yellow pink shirts with beautiful white jeans, get them branded with your printing company, get them to hand out flyers to everybody walking in and out, do some little chocolates to entice people why they should get the flyers. Get your brand out there by telling your story, but your story needs to be underpinned by your value proposition, that your printing costs are 20% cheaper than the ordinary, so that people would know why they're coming there. And then they'll be amazed by the quality of the product. They'll be like, "Ooh, I'm definitely coming back." The key thing is to get the first engagement of the first pool of clients coming in.
Sure. Wow. Manisha, I hope that you have been answered with that. And unfortunately, looking at the time, we have run out of time for today. Sisnogwazi, how can, you know, Manisha and many others get a hold of you if they want, you know, private consultation with you, with regards to, you know, getting excited to start the business.
Okay, so key things that we need to talk about is, once you've developed the value proposition, you can then consider going to register your entity, which mm-hmm. will then inform whether you're going to register a sole proprietor, or you're going to register a private company, or you're going to register a nonprofit organization. I mean, a lot of aspiring entrepreneurs would sometimes not even know where to get access to that information. You can go to Shelf Company Warehouse. You can buy a company off the shelf. You bring in your money. In 3 minutes, you walk away with the company registered with all of your details in it. But then you can also go to CIPIC, which is basically, if you go into the CIPIC website, which is CIPC, and you go to the Biz Portal, it's basically where you can register a company. It's much cheaper than Shelf Company Warehouse, but you can then register an entity. Now you've got something that's working. Mm-hmm. The difference between a PTY and a CC is that the number of members in a CC are less. You can get up to 10 members. In a private company, you can get up to 50 members or 50 shareholders. Private companies can have various companies owning it. A CC cannot have companies owning it. It is actually members. It's individuals, right? So when you think about all of these amazing entrepreneurs, and I've been getting a lot of love from Facebook, and you guys are sending me emails, even on LinkedIn, and you're asking, for some assistance in terms of the training and development intervention. What I would like to advise is, please look out, entrepreneurs, as we are unpacking the slot of Unlocked with Nokwazi. We will be announcing very soon a business and entrepreneurship conference where we'll be imparting and giving you guys the equipping that you need to be able to develop and grow your businesses. Mm-hmm. I know that it's a lot of information to take in all at once, and yeah. the platform and the time that we have here is not sufficient to be able to unpack all of the details. Yeah. So we will be having a business and entrepreneurship conference coming up soon for your impartation, for your information. I haven't been able to respond to a lot of your emails, and I will get to it. But what I would like to advise everybody is that if they're looking for any specific information, they can send me an email, which is nokwazi@osagroup.co.za. Our numbers are actually available for everyone to see on the website. Mm-hmm. A lot of people go to either Facebook or LinkedIn, as well as our OSA YouTube channel, where we post the various videos, and you can sit down and take some notes and understand. This is no longer about just setting up businesses that are struggling. It's setting up businesses that need to thrive. Yeah. So we need the knowledge. We need the skills. We need the understanding. We need to sit on foundations that are solid and sure foundations. Mm. And we need to start building businesses that are bigger than ourselves, where we move away from the concept of me, myself, and I, but being able to be relevant to the customers that you're serving by being ensuring that you are solving a problem that is needed in the marketplace, so you can sustain and you are able to scale up to become global. So yes. that's it for today. Yeah, next week we've got a fabulous financial institution that will be unpacking in terms of access to funding, which mm-hmm. I know you guys talk so much about funding entrepreneurs, yeah. how much you're desperate to buy equipment and all these amazing things. Just look out for it. I think they're absolutely phenomenal mm-hmm. in their space, and they're really passionate about, you know, the development of small businesses, and that's why we're having them on the show next week.
Fantastic. Cannot wait. Sure, getting you excited to start your own business, amazing stuff. And it is said that, you know, a successful business solves problems, right?
Solves problems. That's it.
There we go. It's 10:54. Nokwazi, I know that you're going to have an amazing day.
Yes.
And prep for next time that you are here.
Yay.
Because our people are really, really loving this segment.